absolute power corrupts absolutely.
I'ma make you feel alright, cause I'ma give you what you need, yeah.
Hello, hello, hello. Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am JT, a.k.a. The Master. And as always, this time of day, on a Sunday, it's the Master Plan. As usual, I'm joined by my esteemed co-host, Rev Fantasy. And we're going to be talking today about some baseball. One guy in particular that's got issues that's going to be, looks like he's going to have issues for the whole baseball season, but he's going to fight it. Got another issue with baseball about the voting in the Hall of Fame. Who got in and who should have got in, and how the process is broken and how it's going to get, how can you fix it? We're also going to talk about what took place yesterday in the NFL, two playoff games, and talk about the two playoff games that are going to take place today. The number to call in, 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to Rev or me. So without further ado, let's stop this music. Slow down this train and bring in my co-host so we can get this thing going. What's up, my man?
What's good today on this Sunday morning, man? I'm ready. I'm fired up. I missed last week. Hey, I'm fired up, brother. I'm ready to come back. It's been a little sermon today.
I hear you, my man. Well, as you know, for those who are in to sports, and this is a lot of what we do. We do a lot of sports on this show. We do other things social media-wise or society-wise. But most for the most part, we talk about sports. We're talking about baseball, I mean football, for quite a while. Football is, I wouldn't say winding down, but this is the hot part of football with the playoffs and leading into the Super Bowl. So we're going to transition a little bit, not necessarily into basketball, because basketball is running hot right now. But we're going to be talking about some little baseball, because we got a little baseball news first, and then we'll transition into the rest of the football. Being that said, I want to talk about my man, because he's a news headline an hour, a minute. I'm talking about Alex Rodriguez, with the nickname A-Rod. For those who don't know, it broke yesterday. A-Rod, as you know, went to arbitration with the possibility of him getting 211 games of suspension. That was on the table. That's what Major League Baseball said he deserved, despite what the other guys got, 50, 60 games. He gets 211 because he did so many egregious things over and beyond what the other guys did, that they're going to give him 211 games. So he said, no, that ain't happening. They fought it. He was able to play. When he got healthy, the rest of last season, and then after last season, as everybody knows, they had an arbitration hearing. He walked out, stormed out of that, saying this was a kangaroo court for most part. Everything stacked against me. I can't even get my accuser, the head of the association of my accuser, on the stand to say why he came up with 211 games. So he stormed out. And now, the ruling came down yesterday that, A-Rod, we're not going to give you 211 games. We're going to cut you a break. We're going to suspend you for 100 and 62. So, A-Rod, you're 38 years old. You got a few more years on your contract, but one of those years you're going to be sitting. You're not going to get paid your $20-something million, and you're going to be sitting on the sidelines for a year. So when you come back, you're going to be 39, going on 40, and owed three more years of $20-something million. But you're not going to play in the 2014 season. And what does A-Rod do? Typical A-Rod easy. Oh, no, that's not happening. I'm taking this to the next level, to wherever I can take it, because I'm playing baseball in 2014. Now, before I bring my co-host in there and get his opinion, I want to say this. Now, I just found this out yesterday, later on yesterday, that A-Rod said he's coming to spring training. Said he's coming to spring training, and supposedly there's nothing that can stop him from coming to spring training. Now, I don't know what the Yankees are going to do, because the money is supposed to be given back to the Yankees, or off the books So they have a more or less a $20-something million credit that they can use for other players, meaning the Yankees. And A-Rod threatened to come to spring training when spring training opens up. This just gets better, and the hits just keep on rolling. Talk to me, Rev Fantasy. Welcome to the show, and talk to me, my man.
Yeah, it's been hard for me to sit here and be quiet, brother. Listen to this, man, because this is like days of my life on steroids, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You have this crazy-ass dude and A-Rod. I'm not even going to call him A-Rod. A-Rod.
A-Rod, okay.
And this guy's he's a joke, man. It's crazy to me that we're sitting here talking about this guy. He has made a mockery of this process, you know. And this all this does is prove to me, in America, when you have money, you can do whatever you want to do. You know what
yep.
I mean? You can beat
yep.
the system.
Yeah.
And it's sad because he wouldn't be able to fight this, but he's so damn rich from the money he's made off baseball. You know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
From cheating. So, dude, and you know what? I'm not hating the guy. I mean, I can't stand him. I can't. But Bud Selig's a joke too. I put him right on that pedestal too. I don't.
Oh yeah.
He's a joke too, because guess what? You can't even come and testify, and this is your game. You know? This is what your legacy is, and you're telling me you're not even. You're gonna send your cronies that are under you. Come on, dude. You're giving him the ammo to shoot holes through this case, you know. And A-Rod's not going to stop, dude. Like you said, 211 games they're offering. He takes that, spins it down to 162, and now he's talking about fighting that. And he still has admitted guilt. Still has not come out and said, "Hey, man, I'm a broke man. Yes, I did it. La-di-da-di, let's get past this." You know what I'm saying? I mean, I even have a little bit more respect for guys who came out, like Brian Braun and these other guys who came out and said, "Hey, look, man, sorry. Yeah, I did some stupid things. I made some people look bad, and I want to move past this." You know? This guy is so damn arrogant that he still thinks he has not done nothing wrong. It just blows my mind, man. I mean, baseball, it blows my mind, man. It sickens me sometimes, like, the things I watch and I read. And it's actually, like I said, it's gotten to the point where it's so damn comical, man. I feel like I'm watching, you know, a series on AMC or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's – I don't understand. I don't understand how I can understand, because they turned a blind eye when all these guys were juicing for a long time.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
The fact is, baseball was, I wouldn't say dead and buried, but baseball was in a in a bad financial state because not that you would say that they were in jeopardy of folding, but the revenue wasn't there because the fan base had waned because of there was really no excitement. There was nothing happening in baseball that was overly excited. I mean, you're sure you're going to have your old fans, the fans that are tried and true that are going to follow baseball because they've followed baseball for years. But you're not getting that young base, that future base, that future generation that's going to carry the fandom to another level in the future.
Hey,
so,
JT,
we
forget, man. I mean, this is the problem with America also. History repeats itself, right? So let's talk about what we've been just talking about, how baseball turned a blind eye to this. Let's think back to the summer of freaking 1998. I remember it vividly. We had Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. Like you said, baseball was kind of was slipping into a place where no one was really paying attention to it, like you said.
Right, right.
So here comes two guys that come along, and they start smashing the ball out of the park, and it just made America come alive. The country, it rejuvenated. It was like it was just just like a steroid shot. All of a sudden, everybody got freaking juiced up, and then there was no stopping it. You know what I mean? And it just went from there, from Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, to Barry Bonds, you know? And it just hasn't stopped. And it's just crazy to me. Like, now we had the same guy who was in charge back then stepping out saying these erroneous, you know, crazy-ass things that he comes up with. And I'm sitting there watching this man, Bud Selig, and I'm thinking to myself, you actually owe those individuals a lot because they've made what your company is. They made your company, you know?
Right.
And you knew what was going on. You knew. Others knew. But you still turned a blind eye to it. So, you know, this is the way I look at it, brother. MLB made their bed. It's time to sleep in it. And I get they're trying to do the right thing now, but that doesn't make up for freaking, you know, 15 years of just turning a blind eye. So, I mean, even like I said, A-Roy, he's a dirtbag, man. But you made him. You know what I'm saying? You made him.
See. I don't know if you and I are on the opposite end of this because I'm not an A-Rod fan, but I'm a fan of due process. Let me put it that way. I'm a fan of due process, and it seemed like to me that if you have such a wide gap in meting out a penalty from a select few, I think it was like 15, 20 guys, somewhere around there, versus one guy, which you're putting four times the amount of games on this one guy versus the other guys. I was leaning on the side of A-Rod because of the fact that, in my opinion, he's they're trying to, I don't know what they're trying to do with giving him 211 games. Now, supposedly, the arbitrator, and I'm not taking sides here, but supposedly the arbitrator came up to a just decision and went to 162 games. And like you said, if the head of baseball wasn't going to get up there and sent his a lackey or two up there to testify versus him actually going up there himself, I got to question what baseball has on A-Rod that could warrant him having 162 games. Now, I'm not saying he didn't do roids. I'm not saying that. I mean, he's admitted in the past that he has. He's been tested and never had a positive test. I say that again. He's been tested and he's never come up positive. Okay? So to give somebody who's never had a positive test the amount of games that he's gotten compared to others seems to be unfair, in my opinion, highly unfair. And I gathered baseball figured, well, let's give him, I don't know where they got 211 games. This arbitrary number of 211 games, even if he takes it to wherever he takes it to, arbitration or whatever, and they bump it down. They're not going to bump it down to what we gave the other guys. We're going to get him at least for 100 games. And I'm thinking they probably thought they were going to get about 100 games, maybe a little bit more, not a full season. I mean, they're probably elated right now on one side, but they're not on the other because he won't give this fight up. So until this completely plays out, I have to reserve my judgment. I understand that he is a very egotistical, and in my opinion, he thinks he's above a lot of people. But everybody, this is America, and everybody's innocent until proven guilty. Now, this says he's guilty. That's why he got 162 games. He said he's not. He's still going to fight this until whatever amount of time. And I don't know, man. I mean, to actually say I'm going to spring training. I mean, come on. I mean, I'm going to spring training, I can't even fathom. How can you look your teammates or anybody in the organization or anybody associated with baseball? After you've been handed a 162 game from arbitration, now this arbitrator, and the arbitration process was agreed upon in the CBA for Major League Baseball and the owners. So it's a collective bargaining agreement. This is supposed to be the final. If you got a dispute that you think you've been unjustly penalized. And he go to the arbitrator, and arbitrator is supposed to be the final word. Well, guess what? Like you said, he got the money. This ain't the final word. I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know.
It's a joke, man. It's a joke. And I don't want you to think I'm side. I'm on the far other side, brother. Just trust me, the Rev. It's only the Rev on Sunday, so tell me, I believe in due process, man, and I've had my trials and tribulations also.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a squeaky clean guy either, so, I don't want you to think the Rev, just because that's my stage name, so
mm-hmm.
I got a little bit of fact sheet too, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I believe in due process. But let me say something, man. This is why I say I'm not hating on A-Rod. I just think he's a dirtbag, personally. I just think he's a dirtbag. But it
mm-hmm.
proves it to me. What kind of person this guy is. You got the nuts, the balls to say you're going to show up to spring training? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, really?
Yeah.
Like, who the hell are you, dude? You know what I mean? But in the same fashion of that, of us saying that, it just tells me how much of a joke MLB is and the case they got against this guy. You know? This guy, like you said, hasn't even tested positive, you know? Even when everybody knows this guy, he's guilty, he's admitted guilt in the past, but that's like anybody saying, hell, I killed somebody, I shot up the joint, talking all this stuff on video, I did this, I did that. But when they go to find the evidence of that, i.e. a piss test, because that's the only thing in the CBA they can use against him. They don't have it. So how can you sit up here and try to crucify this man and say, we're going to give you 212 games, no one in ML. The highest penalty right now is like 100 games, you know? And you're going to give this guy 212? I don't know how the hell you come up with that number. And then to reduce it, you know, like you said, the arbitrator is supposed to be the final say. What the arbitrator says, X, Y, Z, that's what the heck it's going to be. Everybody agreed upon that. But now the arbitrator said 162, and they're still going to question that? I mean, that just, it blows my mind, man. I mean, the whole thing, I mean, A-Rod blows my mind. MLB just, they're a bum, A-Rod, in this. I think they're even more dirtbags because I just don't get what Bud Selig and his guys are doing, man. And I'm thinking, dude, you run a powerful organization. You have lawyers. You have resources. You know what I mean? And this is what you're doing, dude. This is the case that you're bringing. You know? Like, I don't understand that at all, man. I'm like, there's a process. You made the process. Follow the process. Enforce the process. Don't go out and try to go above the process, you know? Or, because all you're doing is setting yourself up legally. This guy's got hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. He's going to fight it. He's not going away. He's like, this guy's like foot fungus, brother. When you think you threw him out, he's coming back, dude. You know? He's not coming. He's going to come back every time. And you know, kudos to A-Rod. I don't blame him because, you know what? The case has so many damn holes in it, dude. It looks like, you know, it was a Wild West shootout, and so they shot holes all through his damn case. So against MLB, and you know, good riddance to both. Thank God, Bud Selig's retired, man. Good riddance, because he's a bum. He does not need to be the commissioner of baseball. And A-Rod, even if he gets 162, you're looking at a 39-year-old man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, even though I hate the Yankees, I feel bad for the Yankees because they're in a rock and a hard place.
Yep.
Because here you got, you know, they got 3 years, 4 years left on this guy's contract, paying him like $28 million per, and at least they're getting a waiver and getting some of that money back. They don't want no part of A-Rod. You know, they've already made it clear they don't want nothing of A-Rod, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, but you know what, man? Like I said, the Yankees, too. Hey, you knew what you were getting into, bro, when you signed this guy. You knew it.
Yep.
You knew what the reputation that was following him. So, you know, I don't feel bad for anybody. You make your bed, brother, it's time for you to sleep in it. And the Yankees are in that boat, too, man. So,
you made a deal with the devil.
When you steal, you dance with the devil, brother. You know what I mean? That's it.
Yep. Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
All right. Needless to say, A-Rod, if he ever, and I doubt it, he will, but if he ever makes it to the Hall of Fame, I doubt if he ever will, but that's why I'm going to transition over to the 2000 Baseball Hall of Fame vote. Like I said, who follow baseball, they know that in the last week, the Hall of Fame voted three guys into the Hall of Fame. Two guys I agree with. One guy I was like surprised. I know he probably had the stats, but I think there's other guys that should have been in ahead of him. So three guys I'm talking about are Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine. For years, these two guys were 1 and 2 on their Atlanta Braves pitching staff and were a dynamic duo among others that were on that pitching staff. But these guys stood out, one lefty, one righty. And then the Chicago White Sox slugger Frank Thomas. Maddox got 555 votes. Glavin got 525 votes. Frank Thomas got 478 votes. All right. The necessary percentage of votes required to be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame is 75%. Quite naturally, you know that the Baseball Writers of America vote. Why? I don't know. Because, I mean, I have a problem with the process. Let me put it that way. Let me put it this way. The baseball writers, they're all over the country. Some of them, quite naturally, are in the cities that these guys are from. Some of these guys, from what I understand, don't watch, or I wouldn't say don't watch, but haven't watched enough games or some of these guys play, get the sheet in front of them, and I think they're only required, they can't vote past 10 people on the ballot.
Yeah, 10 people here.
Yes. So when you don't have one the greatest, I wouldn't say the greatest, the most offensive catcher in Major League Baseball, and this is a real, in my opinion, I see a lot of these guys on here, and we can talk and we can break it down to some of these guys who I think should have been on here, and it had to do with the steroid era also. The most offensive catcher in baseball history, and I'm talking about Mr. Mike Piazza. This is the second time. Last year they didn't vote anybody in because the fact is they didn't want to take the chance of putting somebody in that was part of the steroid area or was suspected of it, which I really had a problem with. And that's one of the reasons why Mike Piazza hasn't been put in. And I'm just singling out for now. We can go to other guys, but I'm singling out for now because the fact is this thing carried on from last year to this year that there was suspicion. It was not known up until the Hall of Fame vote that Mike Piazza was suspected of taking steroids because of acne on his back, and that's one of the side effects of supposedly of steroids. Now, he's never tested positive, never come up as being on a list or suspected of it, but the baseball writers, because they have a suspicion that he may have taken steroids, decided last year and now again this year, among others, suspected of taking it.
That's ridiculous.
Suspected. I mean, you know, come on. And this is what bothers me. The arrogance of these baseball writers that they control because of their suspicion. Not anything that's founded. Their suspicion. They can suspect that he can do anything, or not just him, but any player, and not put him on the ballot or not vote for him because of the fact of they're suspected. There's speculation out there. Now, if that's the case, why even have the vote? Why even have the vote? Because you can say that about every player that comes up, that's eligible, because all these players now have gone through the steroid era. All these, for the most part, most of these players have gone through the steroid era. So that means you're not going to vote for any of them? Come on. Greg Maddux, Tom Glavin, Frank Thomas, they all went through the steroid era. So what do you do? Are you kidding me? Talk to me, Rev. Am I right,
dude,
or wrong? What's going on here?
You're spot on, JT. I said, man, this really burned me up too. Who the hell are the Baseball Writers of America? You know what I mean? Like, for one, the system is so broke, like you said, because most of these guys, they don't even come out and admit. They come in and do interviews. It's broke down pretty much by region, so a lot of these guys don't even get subjected to watching,
right,
you know, Frank Thomas, you know, he's in Chicago because a good number of the voters are in Boston. So, it, of course, people are going to be subjective to their region. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy how they do the voting process there. It definitely needs to be revamped. It needs to get looked at. You got guys like I read on ESPN, Dan Levitar, so, you know, giving his vote away to Deadspin. You know, did you see that story?
Mm-hmm. No, talk to me. I briefly, but enlighten me.
So one guy, Dan Levitar, big-time sports writer, he's so sick with baseball that he gave his vote, he donated his vote to Deadspin.com, and they ran a poll who they should vote for. And now this guy has lost his vote for future voting. And that just proves to me how much of a joke the process is. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
It's a joke. And you know what? And that's all I'm going to say. The system, we know it's broke. It needs to be looked at. You know, but like I said, in true baseball fashion, it'll probably take another 10, 20 years for them to get off their butts and change it because they want to follow the traditions of baseball, which is bullcrap. But that's all I got to say about the voting process. Everybody knows it's a mockery. It's ridiculous. Who actually got voted in this year? I'm with you, bro. I was dead on. I mean, Greg Maddux, one of the top five pitchers of all time. This guy, for a guy who couldn't throw it, go back and swing it 100 miles an hour. I mean, probably the best pure pitcher of the last, you know, 60 years.
Right.
He could just pinpoint the ball wherever he wanted to throw it. Same thing with Tommy Glavin, who could rear back and throw it. And it's just amazing what these guys were teammates. And I think we took for granted in the 90s how great these guys were.
Yeah.
They were pitching in the steroid era. You know, that's what seemed more amazing to me.
Yep.
That
these
guys, you know, Greg Maddux, you know, 300-something wins. Tommy Glavin, like, I want to say like 257 wins, you know. It's just amazing. And usually they say the magic number for pitchers to get in the fall is 300. I'm thinking nowadays they need to come down that pedestal like they did with Glavin because he was dominant. And the only issue I had was with, don't get me wrong, bro, and I love baseball, and the big hurt was truly deserving of being in the Hall of Fame. I don't want to take that away from him. Deserves, but first term, first vote, you know, first time Hall of Famer, first ballot Hall of Famer, and you're going to vote him in over guys like you said, a Mike Piazza, greatest hitting catcher of all time.
Right.
A guy like Greg Biggio.
Yep.
Greg Biggio, you know, he's not great. He did it the right way, played hard for 18-plus years. 3,000 hits. He has all those milestones that you look for in a Hall of Famer. There's only two people that have hit over 3,000 hits, and they're not in the Hall of Fame. Craig Biggio and Rafael Palmeiro. And one was a cheater, and one's not a cheater.
Right.
You know? So how can you sit here for 2 years now and not put Craig Biggio in? You know, last year they didn't want to put him in because they didn't vote nobody in. This year he falls 2 votes short because the process is so broke. You know, but you put Frank Thomas in. To me, Frank Thomas is no greater than a guy like Jeff Bagwell, you know?
Yep.
No different. Same, pretty much the same stat line. He got one or two or more MVPs, but pretty much the same kind of player, you know? Very much the same kind of player, and but yet, you know, he gets in on his first term Hall of Fame ballot, and it just blew my mind. When I seen that, I thought for sure it was going to be Biggio, Glavin, and Greg Maddux, for sure. That was my three, I thought for sure. I thought maybe if there was a fourth, it was going to be a guy like, I thought they were going to go old school, and I thought they were going to put in a guy like Jack Morris, who's well-deserving, too. So, you know, it is what it is, man, but like we said, bro, everybody knows the process is broke. I think they need to sit back and just, they need to look at this thing and just be like, how can we it just baseball makes their it makes a mockery out of thing, and they make themselves look bad, and then they wonder why people get turned off to it. But these are just examples of why people get turned off to baseball. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
So.
Well, let me put it this way. You talked about Craig Biggio. Well, 0.2%. He needed 75%. He got 74.8. Okay. You also talked about Jack Morris. Jack Morris was a little further down on the chain because I got the list of voting and percentage in front of me. 61.5. So Jack Morris wasn't even, to my opinion, wasn't even close, even though he should have been. Mike Piazza was just below Biggio, but far below him with 62.2. Now, you can see how broken this is when you go down the list and people like J.T. Snow gets two votes. Armando Benitez gets one vote. And I don't even know this guy. Jock Jones gets one vote. Now,
you put those votes again in the Biggio and he's in.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand. I don't even know. I know who J.T. Snow is. I know who Armando Benitez is. Jock Jones? Who the heck is that? Who the heck?
These guys were decent players, not great. Decent. Mm-hmm. But are you all those guys, I hate, and it's no disrespect to them. They all had good careers. Those five votes that they just, someone pissed away, that's exactly what they did. They pissed it away because they didn't want to vote for somebody else. And it was a joke vote, and they gave it to those three individuals as a joke. You know,
yeah.
Come on, bro.
Yeah.
Jock Jones.
Yeah.
You know, he can't even carry fucking these guys' bat bag to the Hall of Fame. You know what I'm saying? Get out of here, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's a process that needs to be fixed. And like you said, baseball, they drag their feet and so archaic in the way they do things. And it takes so long for them to change a process, regardless of what has to do with baseball, whether it's in the voting of the Hall of Fame or within in the process of reviewing plays or whatever. They're so archaic and behind the times. Among all the other sports, these other sports are pretty progressive and pretty. Flexible and improving their sport and making it more fan friendly when they do make changes and the fans see it that enhances the sport. Baseball is very resistant to that, and that's the problem. I think out of all the sports, and I think I can say this with honesty and with conviction, that baseball is more entrenched in the good old boys club than any other sport. It's more entrenched in the good old boys club, like I said, than any other sport. And if you don't look a certain way and if you don't act a certain way, baseball is very resistant to accepting you into their fold. You follow what I'm saying?
Oh, dude, I 100%, man. It's ridiculous. Like just baseball in general. I don't know, man. To me, they just need to come to the drawing table, the players' union, the new commissioner, and they just need to overhaul everything, dude. And they need to start over from round zero, and say, hey, look, we got a product that people love. I love baseball. It's a beautiful thing. You know what I mean? It's a great game.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But it just people get turned off to it because you got a guy who's an idiot leading baseball, Bud Selig, who looks a part of an idiot. He doesn't articulate his thought very well, you know, and he just makes unneeded attention to baseball, and he makes a mockery of most things. You know, you look over his tenure, look all the things that have happened under his watch, and it's ridiculous, you know. There's no other commissioner in any other pro sports. You don't hear about these things with, you know, Roger Goodell. You know, he's always doing something to better the game, or he's doing something, you know, to build his product. That's why the NFL is a multi-billion-dollar business, bro. Roger Goodell, the guy puts football, like, foremost and first above everything. And, you know, the players, he's always thinking about the well-being of the players, you know. You look at, but really, this guy kind of reminds me of George Bush. He's all over the place, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't articulate his thoughts well. He doesn't speak well. He gets in front of the camera, you know, he's picking his nose. And he just looks like you said, it's a good old boy system. Nobody wants to go against the grain, even if they know it's for the betterment of the game. And that's why I said it. They're gonna reap what they sow. You know, eventually people are gonna get tired of it. And all they're doing is costing us all future revenues and potential to grow. You know, so it's hard to sit back and watch that when you can see what the potential is. And, you know, I think me or you could run a better league than this guy, man, you know. Maybe I was voted the fantasy executive of the year, so maybe Bud Tulick, when he steps down, maybe they'll give me a shot to run the MLB, man.
Are you serious?
No, I'm just kidding. But my first thing I would do is, the first thing I would do is, get Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame. It's time.
Yeah, it's time. You're right.
It's time. It's mm-hmm. time. Guys paid his mm-hmm. dues. Leave him alone. You know what I'm saying? Leave him alone. You got other guys on that list that are just as dirty as Pete Rose, and worse character issues than Pete Rose. You know what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying? Let
sure.
Pete Rose go. Leave him. Bud Stewart could have been done that. Let him go, man. Let him do. You let him get. No, the Hall of Fame is a museum. We're not talking about the Hall of Fame is. You know what I mean? Like, up there on this pedestal of, you know, you're gonna get everything in your life. You're gonna get money. It's a museum. Tell a story. You know, you got Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame as far as a museum piece where they talk about, you got memorabilia of him, you're displaying Pete Rose there. Let him get in the Hall, man, you know? And it's about time that they think about doing that, because there's no doubt that he should be on the ballot, you know? So, yeah, you got me worked up, man. I got to go drink some coffee, JT, man. Talking about baseball, man.
All right. Well, I want to transition from baseball to something that's controversial, but it has to do with football. And it has to do with a punter. Yes, I'm talking about a punter, people, that was released from the Minnesota Vikings. I'm talking about Chris Clue. I don't know if you're familiar with Chris Clue. Okay. Chris Clue. Came out publicly, not saying he was gay. He supposedly he's not gay, but he was active. He was a activist for same-sex marriage, and saying things that the how can I say that he was active. I wouldn't say active. He was.
He's looking out for the rights of the LBJ, or what they call it, the lesbian, homosexual, gay community.
Right.
And their right as far as being discriminated against by the Minnesota Vikings organization, and in reference to three individuals, you know, three coaches that used to speak out and say, you know, homophobic things. And And so, yeah, that's where that story's at, JT.
Okay. I'm reading an article as we speak, and one of the things, he has three things documented, and I'm going to read this on you because it's very important. This happened in the summer of 2012. All right, he was released on, I think, last year. But I'm reading this, and it just goes to show you that how non-progressive the NFL is, And I'm surprised when I read this that, well, he probably was pushed by it, but I'm talking about on September 8th of 2012. The head coach of the Vikings, which happened to be Leslie Frazier at the time, called him into his office after a morning special teams meeting. And once inside the office, Leslie Frazier immediately told him he needed to be quiet and stop speaking out on this stuff, referring to support for same-sex marriage rights.
Right.
And he told the coach that I felt it was the right thing to do, and I also told him that one of his main coaching points to us was to be good men and to do the right thing. He reiterated his desire for me to cease speaking on the subject, stating that the wise coach once told me there are two things you don't talk about in the NFL, politics and religion. And Clue said, I repeated my stance that this was the right thing to do, that equality is not something to be denied to anyone, and that I would not promise to cease speaking out. And then Leslie Frazier came out and said plainly, if that's what you feel you have to do, and he said he could feel the tension in the room when he left. The following day, before the first game, a game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's his regular season game. The owner of the team, Ziggy Wilf, came up to him, shook his hand, and told him, Chris, I'm proud of what you've done. Please feel free to keep speaking out. I just came from my son's best friend's wedding to his partner in New York, and it was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. On September 10th, once again he was called in Leslie Frazier's office. Frazier asked if I was going to keep speaking out on a matter of same-sex marriage and equality. He responded that I was, and I related what Ziggy Wilf had said to me at the game the day before. Frazier looked stunned and put his hand across his face, and then he told me, well, he writes the checks. It looks like I've been overruled. And at that point, he got his personal public relations assistant on a conference call to ask her what to do. And she outlined some strategies, mainly centered around talking only with large national media groups and ignoring the smaller market. And Clue said I would be sure not to say anything to denigrate the team, but that I would like to talk to anyone who was interested. Frazier and the PR person attempted to dissuade me from this course of action, saying that this message would be more than effective if I presented it properly. I suspected this was another attempt to keep me from speaking out. I did not agree to any course of action they suggested, and I left the meeting once it concluded. And it goes on and on. Eventually, he got released, and the reason that he says he got released for the most part is because of his outspoken views on same-sex marriage and gay rights equality. And now it's up to the point that Viking investigators that are going to talk with Clue to, and he's supposed to name witnesses anonymously. Now, I don't know how you do that, but this is not going to go away either, just like A-Rod, but this is in a different context. And this has been a big thing for over the last year about gays in the NFL or equality of gays in the NFL or gays in general. And Clue had been outspoken along with, and I can't remember the guy's name from the Baltimore Ravens. These guys have been outspoken about equality for all, including gays. And I gather that this is going to, I don't know if it's going to blow up in the Vikings organization's face, because he's accusing three coaches in the Vikings organizations, Leslie Frazier and Rick Spielman, which is the head coach and the general manager at one point, and the special teams coach, who happens to be Mike Pfeiffer. He's got these labeled in here as two cowards, Leslie Frazier and Rick Spielman, and the special teams coach, Mike Pfeiffer, as the bigot. So This should be very interesting. I don't know if you know about this story or completely about it or read up on it, but this is going to be pretty interesting, and this has not gone away, and I'll be interested how this turns out over the next few years, because it's probably going to take a while to completely come out.
I mean, my thought on it is, kudos to him for if he is doing the right thing. Kudos to him. I mean, you know, I'm never going to say turn a blind eye to something that's wrong. You know, it's kind of hilarious in a way to me. This guy Chris Cooley, who isn't even gay, a homosexual, who's speaking out and fighting for this. You know,
mm-hmm.
It has no relevance, but, you know, he's more passionate about this subject than there's individuals, I'm sure, that are in the NFL who are homosexuals who don't want to speak about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like you said, due process, bro. Let the process play out before your people are quick to jump the gun. If it comes out that those things are true, you know, and then you go forward from there. But, you know, of course people are going to try to spin things saying, you know, this guy needs to shut his mouth or, you know, he was cut, you know. No one knows. That's all erroneous allegations. It's all speculation, you know.
Right.
So, like I said, let the process play out, you know. And like I said, you know, if it comes to be found, it, then you go from there. But this guy, I mean, in a way, I kind of read between the lines, and I've watched interviews that he's given, and he's saying, he's dead on. He's like, if I was to speak out about something and I was lying, you know, I could be sued for defamation of character. These guys can return and sue me, you know, for slander of their character. So he's like, I don't make enough money to give away money where someone to attack someone personally. So I think there could be something there personally, because I don't think this guy would be willing to, you know, put his financial life on the line for this. But, you know, like I said, it's all new, it's fresh. Let it play out. Let the process play out. They hire independent investigators who he's happy with. You know, but the NFL is one of those secret societies, man. I don't know what they're going to get out. Like, two things. I don't know if others are going to step forward to say anything out of fear of reprisal, because that's what he said he's scared of. He wants the football players who witnessed this, you know, to remain anonymous. That's almost... There's no more of that ever in any, even in the dang government, they can't keep people's names anonymous. So he's afraid that if those individuals speak out, they're going to be blacklisted. And it's probably true that NFL is one of those touchy organizations. It's just like the Jonathan Martin, Richard Incognito thing.
Right.
The locker room is a very safer place, you know, and for people that play sports like SJT and, you know, I'm in an organization, I'm United States Army, you know, there's certain things that are said that might not necessarily be the right things to say, but they're said with no harm intended. It's just a norm, you know,
right.
Just like in a locker room.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and an outside person who would hear that would be offended. Well, for most people, that's just a normal verbiage, you know, in a locker room environment, you know.
Right.
And, you know, so I'm sure there was things that were said, you know, just like in Richie Incognito in the Martin case. And I'm sure it's going to be a black eye on the NFL, because it's probably was some things that were said that are nasty and hurtful to, you know, others. But that's the culture, you know, of combat sport. I call it combat sports. You know, you got 300-pound men trying to race down the field and cream each other and tackle and inflict pain upon another person. You're inflicting your will upon breaking someone else's spirit. so to say, you know. So,
sure.
I mean, it's just one of the things that's a culture environment for the NFL, and, you know, it's definitely something I think you're trying to change the culture. And these are one of the things that this might be one of the situations that might be a landfall thing that might make rules and regulations across locker rooms and practice organizations when they're doing these activities. It's going to probably have to, you know, it'll make the NFL kind of take a step back and come up with some rules and regulations regarding the situation.
All right. Let's go into stay with the NFL. We talk about the games yesterday. We got a few more minutes, but I think we're going to go a little over time because I want to talk about the two games yesterday and the two games that are going to take place today. First off, in the docket left, the first game, 4:30 game, the Saints versus the Seahawks. Now, the Seahawks were favored, I think, by at least a touchdown in this game. And this is the third meeting between these guys in the last few years. Seahawks being on top on the last two, especially the last one in the regular season where they absolutely wasted the New Orleans Saints. They knew it was going to be a difficult game. A lot of rain and wind in this game, so you would think there would be a lot of running. Marshawn Lynch, 28 carries, 140 yards, two touchdowns. Russell Wilson, only 103 yards passing and no touchdowns. You knew on the other side that Drew Brees was going to throw the ball because that's what they do. They try to run the ball quite naturally. They couldn't do it against the Seattle Seahawks and that stifling defense. He threw for 309 yards and a touchdown, but they still got beat 23-15 in this game. This game was like watching paint dry, in my opinion. This was not really an exciting game to me. More or less, I knew what the outcome would be. Just a matter of how much the Seahawks would beat the Saints by. There are definitely some flaws with the New Orleans Saints. Different parts of the game, they were able to run the ball, but they effectively couldn't run the ball and really didn't move the ball all that well. They scored their 15 points in the fourth quarter, where more or less I would say the Seattle Seahawks, for the most part, I wouldn't say they let up, but they weren't as intense as they were prior three quarters. And like I said, this was like watching paint dry. Your opinion, my man.
I couldn't agree more, man. I was sitting there watching this game yesterday. I'm actually in the Seattle area right now, and I was sitting up there watching the game at a local sports bar, and thousands of Seahawks fans up there. And I really personally was hoping that the Saints were going to pull the shocker. I wasn't holding my breath, but it was like watching paint dry for three quarters. Really, honestly, I give credit to the Saints because defensively they showed up yesterday to win that game. Their defense really put them in a position to win that game because that game could have got away from them really quick. If those field goals are touchdowns, you're looking at a huge deficit right from the jump. So their defense showed up to play. Like I said, Marshawn Lynch, even though he did his thing yesterday, I mean, the Saints, they just kept battling him, and they picked their poison. They weren't going to let Russell Wilson beat them. They kept him in the pocket, and even when he did get out of pocket, those speedy defensive tackles and defensive ends they got were able to get after him and make his life miserable. But I'll tell you what, the thing I took away from that game is Seattle has perfected winning ugly. They've perfected that over the last 2 years. That's what they do. So it's no surprise to me. It's like I'm in the bar and I'm listening to people that are like, oh, man, that was an ugly win for us. And I'm like, dude, this is what you guys do. You win ugly. You play defense. It's a game of field position. You got a good kicker. You offensively, you don't have anybody really that great other than Marshawn Lynch. You know, your receivers aren't that great. And I just sat there and was marveled how Seattle fans were, how, you know, arrogant they were, thinking that they were just going to walk over the Saints. And I'm like, you know, you guys might be the number one seed in the NFC. really the gap between 1 and 6 ain't much, you know.
No.
You're talking a game or two, you know. So
right.
I just the takeaway from that was Seattle, they win ugly. That's what they do. And they're, if they play the way they did, though, I mean, honestly, if they play the way they played yesterday, next week against the Panthers or the Niners, they're in trouble. Because you're looking at two teams defensively that can match them even more so, and they have more explosive offense. You know, they could do the same things that and they both can run, I'll say. Even though Drew Brees, that team is built to throw it. There was no throwing the ball yesterday in that rain. Drew Brees was throwing some ducks. He just could not – he couldn't get a good grip on the ball. So it looked ugly throwing the ball. But it's a whole other show when the Panthers or the Niners come to town, because you already know you're getting a dosage of a run. And it's going to be who can force who's will on who. Who's going to make the big play? Who's going to make the big turnover? That's what those games are going to come down to. Who can just break whoever's will and force their will upon the other team. And I'm excited because I'm a Niners fan. I can't wait today, and I can't wait till next week. You know, either way, I think the NFC Championship's going to be – it might be a boring game to watch, but I'm more of a traditionalist, so I can sit and watch a 10-3 game with people getting smoked all over the field defensively.
Yep.
I like that. I like that game yesterday. There were people getting knocked out left and right.
Yep.
So, for me, I was smiling, you know. So,
speaking of imposing their will on a defense, the New England Patriots, known for throwing the ball all over the field, Tom Brady and company, Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, for years, have been known to be throwing the ball all over the field. His options on throwing the ball depleted. And for the last part of this past season, the New England Patriots have been running the ball. So what happens? They come into a perfect storm against a team like the Indianapolis Colts, who is not that very good against the run or pass, but more vulnerable against the run. And what happens? 6 rushing touchdowns. Tom Brady only throws for 198 yards, 0 touchdowns. 0 touchdowns Tom Brady threw for yesterday. LeGarrette Blount goes for over 160 yards and 4 touchdowns. Stephen Ridley scores 2 touchdowns. It was a run fest. They ran the ball over 40 times yesterday. Over 40 times, only threw it 25. Almost a 2-to-1 ratio, run and pass. When's the last time you've seen that from a New England Patriots game? They completely imposed their will on the Indianapolis Colts. Now, I thought the game was going to be in the first quarter, at the end of the first quarter, it was 14-7. So I thought this game was going to be a shootout. And I thought it would be relatively a little closer once you saw what the game was progressing to. But the running of the Patriots and then the turnovers that Andrew Luck kept accumulating, he threw 4 interceptions yesterday, came out with a 43-22 win, which I figured. Well, I think we had talked about this before. I think I talked on Thursday or yesterday. Out of all the games, I thought this game would definitely cover the spread, which was, I think, 10 at the time. Excuse me, at the time. That the Patriots completely dominated the Colts, and the old school versus the new school prevailed. Talk to me, man.
Dude, I watched this game yesterday, too, and I was blown away. I mean, I haven't seen in a performance in a playoff game in a long time where a team, their offensive line was the star of the game, you know.
Yep.
Kudos to LeGarrette Blount, kudos to Steve Rook, but the real winners of that game was the offensive line for the New England Patriots. They dominated. I haven't seen where an offensive line was able to push a defensive line 5 yards off the ball every play. And I'm just, I was marveled. I was sitting there watching this, and I'm like, you know, this is proof. I was sitting there watching with a group of individuals, and I was like, you know what? I said the same one thing. I said, they were going for the Colts. I said, I would never, coming off a bye week, coming off a week where they've had some rest, I said, Bill Belichick is such a mastermind of coming up with plans. You can never, if you watch week to week the New England Patriots from week one, they don't do the same thing week to week. So how the heck can you game plan for them, you know? And they're not, they don't have huge playmakers where you know, okay, Tom Brady's going to throw the ball to Julian Edelman every time. No. They spread the ball around to everybody. And who the heck was Garrett Blunt? Are you kidding me? This guy was a pass off in Tampa. He was projected to be like the fourth running back on this roster.
Right.
He breaks it. This guy gets 4 touchdowns, you know, 160-something yards. Are you kidding me? I'm just like marvel. I mean, you have to appreciate the way the Patriots play. I mean, I think it's hopefully, I mean, honestly, whoever they got playing next week, I think this could be a sign of things to come, because if they got to go up to play Denver, I mean, they're going to have to run the ball to keep Peyton Manning off the field. There's no way they can get in a shootout with Peyton Manning. So, you know, I just think I won't say they showed their hand, but they're going to have to show next week if they do got to go to Denver that they can run the ball and control the line of scrimmage. And I think they very well could against that Denver defense, because it's nothing that great. Similar, a very similar defense to the Colts. So, like I said, kudos to New England. They looked really good yesterday, really good. Let's see what they do this coming up week and moving forward. I like the way they're playing though right now. Good, great coaching though. Their coaching staff puts them in position to win every game. It's just a matter of executing and cutting down on the mistakes on their behalf, and they're in most games.
Right. Let's move on to the 1 o'clock game today. 49ers versus the Panthers. Two top five defenses, if I'm not mistaken, going up against each other. This is going to be a very interesting game. They last time they played was a 10-9 decision the Panthers won. Kaepernick didn't play that well. Michael Crabtree wasn't on the field at the time. Since then, Crabtree has picked up his game. Michael Crabtree has something to do with that. 49ers have come in, on a 6-game winning streak, if I'm not mistaken. So they're coming into a 12-4 Panthers stadium. 49ers are also 12-4. 49ers are 6-2 away, and the Panthers are 7-1 at home. These two are two very physical defensive teams with two dynamic quarterbacks that can make plays with their legs when possible. The 49ers, in my opinion, have a better passing attack with Colin Kaepernick headed up as a quarterback quite naturally, with Antoine Bolden, Vernon Davis, and now Michael Crabtree, who's healthy and playing well. On the other side, they have a banged-up Steve Smith, who says he's less than 60% that's going to be playing. You got Brandon LaFell in the passing game. You have Cam Newton heading that quite naturally. He could also make plays with his legs. This is a pick'em game to me. I mean, this is a tough game to handicap. So far, the teams that have had byes on Saturday have won. So what's going to take place today? Two teams that have had byes last week that are playing against two teams that are second game on the road. I hate to do it, because if the 49ers didn't have to go against the Panthers I think that they came against someone else, they would win this game. But I have a hard time thinking that the Panthers are going to let the 49ers get past them. Unfortunately, I have quite a few people that are 49ers fans. I have a nephew. I have my wife. I have a son that are 49ers fans. And you too. And I think that this is a tough game for me to handicap. I have to go with the home team. I go with the Panthers, but this is not going to be easy, and I wouldn't be surprised if the 49ers pulled this out. Talk to me, my man.
Okay, brother. Hey, I'm not going to be biased in who I pick in this game. Like you said, I think from a money standpoint, it's a pick 'em. You're dead on. Because both these defenses are nasty. You know, I think right now, from the Carolina perspective of things, that week off will do them some good. They need it. They were kind of they made a final push to get that number two seed, so they could rest up. So they needed that. You already know what you're getting from them defensively. Their front seven is tops, you know, top three in all of NFL. They're going to bring it. Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, them boys up front, Greg Hardy on the defensive line. They got some beasts. There's no doubt about that. Colin Kaepernick's going to have his hands full today. I think on offense, the X factor to me in this game, on offense, there's two guys. Well, it all centers around Cam Newton. Because once Cam Newton gets going, it's like an affection. You know, he gets others involved. So, to me, D'Angelo Williams isn't good enough to take on that defense by himself. You know, so it's gonna come down to Cam making some plays with his feet, getting out the pocket, breaking contain, and then guys like Brandon LaFell and those guys come into play, the Greg Olsen, that's how they get their numbers. Because if they just run, they go back and line up and just try to throw the ball, they can't do that against the Niners, too good. They just hand the ball off to D'Angelo, Niners defense too good. So this game's going to come down to Cam Newton making some plays with his feet, breaking contain, and then that's what's going to cause second and third order effects of the Niners defense, someone getting loose on that defense. On the flip side of things, you know, the Niners right now are playing the best ball in the NFC, right? I mean, over the last 6 weeks, to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's been a more impressive team. I mean, they've been even more impressive than Seattle. I mean, the thing that worries me with that is they put their heart and soul into this because they've had to fight for the playoff life to get that 5 seed. And, you know, even though they're not banged up, eventually that wear and tear of being in all those fights are gonna take its toll on you, you know. And this is a big physical team they're going up against, too. And the Panthers showed them that, you know, a couple weeks back. And, you know, it's gonna be a fight. There's no doubt about this. I think the Seattle's got to be licking their chops because I think whatever team does come out of this is going to come out with half their roster bruised, battered, and bruised. You know, and Seattle's going to be happy about that because both these teams are just going to sit back and just be like a heavyweight fight. They're going to punch each other in the face, and whoever has the last punch is probably going to get the W. And I think that's going to be the Niners today. I just think offensively right now, the way they're doing things, you can see finally Crabtree back at 100% for the first time. I think last week was an indication that Crabtree is back to being Crabtree. You know, he's playing carefree. Kaepernick finally looked like the old Cap getting out and running. And that's for Kaepernick to be effective, he has to play that way. He has to play reckless. You know, he has to – he needs that internal clock to go off in his head, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. He doesn't, you know, find nobody. He gets out of the pocket and he goes, you know. And I think this game simply comes down to the two quarterbacks. I think it rests on Colin Kaepernick in this game. Same thing, as I said, with Cam, to make plays with their feet. Because when Kaepernick starts doing that, then that's when you see a Michael Crabtree getting, you know, open. That's when you see Antoine Bolden breaking contain and able to get open. That's when you see a Vernon Davis running a seam route down the middle, getting touchdowns, you know. And I don't see this being a shootout at all. Last time it was a 10-9 game. I can see this being a 14-10, you know, 13-10 game, honestly, today. But I just think the way the Niners are playing right now, I would give the W to the Niners.
Okay. All right. And then to top off the playoff weekend, excuse me, we have the 440 game with the Chargers, 9-7 Chargers, who are 4-4 away, versus the 13-3 Broncos, who are 7-1 at home. And that one was given to them by the Chargers. So, and Philip Rivers has a winning record. I don't know if you knew, noticed or not. Philip Rivers has a winning record against Peyton Manning. And Peyton Manning, quite naturally, for those who know about Peyton Manning's playoff record, is only 9-11 in the playoffs. So, the line is 8 points. I think the Broncos rested, laid a wood on the Chargers. It may start off close, but I think the Broncos coming out, especially Peyton Manning, making a statement that they're going to get the their wide receivers highly involved in this game, so that the Chargers, who are another team that is running the ball effectively like they did last week, are going to have to get away from that and put the ball into Philip Rivers' hands. So they're going to try to run that score up as quick as possible to make the Chargers one-dimensional, and I think they'll be able to do it with the two Thomases, Wes Welker, who's back from his concussion problems, Noshawn Marino, who runs the ball along with Monty Ball effectively, and also Eric Decker. I like the Broncos by double digits in this game. Talk to me, man.
Hey, I'm with you too, man. I think Peyton Manning coming off a bye week, they got the game plan for this game, and you know, kudos to San Diego. Right now, going into playoffs, they're playing the hottest ball. They're playing the most consistent ball on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
They're not great defensively, but they do enough to get the timely turnover on defense. You know,
mm-hmm.
Special teams, they've been doing it on special teams, getting kickoff returns. And all three phases of the game, offense, defense, they're just playing really consistent. And when you do that, you give yourself a chance to win. With that being said, I don't see that happening today. I think they run out of gas today. Peyton Manning's he's an awesome, you know, force on offense. I think, you know, his playoff record is 9-11. I think he goes to 10-11 today because I think offensively they're going to put up in the high 40s today. Wes Walker, I think they're going to get him involved early coming off his injuries. But it would be interesting to see if Denver comes out the gate and stumbles a little bit, where San Diego gains a little confidence maybe, where they can get them at three and outs or get a timely turnover, where that game can go. I'd be interested to see that. But I honestly, my money tells me it's going to be a two-touchdown, three-touchdown win for Denver.
And the thing about this, and I always find these things fascinating because I'll be 60 years old this year, and so I know these teams, the Chargers and the Broncos, when they were in the AFL, when they weren't a part of the NFL, when they were in the AFL. So these guys have a long storied history of not liking each other, and they've been divisional foes for a long, long time. And the names may change, but the feelings don't change. The organization, both organizations respect each other, but they do not like each other because they've had heated battles over the years, AFL and AFC now. So it can go either way, but I think for just like you said, them being when I say them, I mean the Broncos being rested for a week, and the Chargers happen to be on the road for a second time coming into a hostile environment with a division rival, with one and done on the line. I think the Broncos are going to take him and take him handily. with that being said, We come to the end of the show. We ran over a little bit, but I appreciate anyone who's been listening. It's been a pleasure with Rev Fantasy, as always. Before I close out the show, Rev, you got any sermon that you want to push out before we say goodbye?
No, man, hey, it was a good show today, guys. I appreciate all our listeners out there. Ready, and I'm amped up for another day of football, and go Niners.
All right, people, tune in next week, same time, same place. Master Plan, we'll be here just laying down the gospel as always. See ya.